Hello, and welcome to the Airman's Edge podcast, an environment to have both personal and professional conversations about some of the positions that the Massachusetts Air National Guard has to offer. I'm your host, Tech Sergeant Tim Thorpe, a member of the Massachusetts Air National Guard's recruiting team. The goal of this podcast is to be both informative and transparent so that those who have contemplated answering the call to serve their local community and do something larger than themselves can make as informed a decision as possible regarding their future in the Air National Guard. Each episode, we will be highlighting one specific career field offered in the Mass Air Guard. With that, we will bring in a new guest to discuss both their career in the Air National Guard and their overall experience through the recruiting process, training, and serving. Today, we will be talking with Master Sergeant Nicholas Mystician and his time serving as a weather specialist, career code 1W0X1. Scores needed for this career field are 66 general and 50 electrical. Vision correctable to 20/20 is a requirement. The tech school location is at Keesler Air Force Base, located in Mississippi. The tech school length, according to airforce.com, is 133 days, which is roughly 7 months. However, Sergeant Mystician will go into more details regarding the tech school length. The bonus currently affiliated to this career field is $50,000. The security clearance is secret. And with that, I'd like to welcome Master Sergeant Mystician to the show. Very honored to have Master Sergeant Mystician from the 102nd's 202 Combat Weather Flight. Master Sergeant Mystician, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we're just going to kind of get an overall perspective of what somebody in the weather career field does, both for the Air Force, here specifically at Otis. And we always like to start at the beginning. So, you know, who was your recruiter? What was your recruiting experience like? I know you've got some years here, so as much as you can remember.
That's about, 20 years ago? Yeah, 20 years ago this year. I went in, I moved up here back in 2020. I'm originally from Florida, so I joined the Florida Guard. And my recruiting experience and what I've seen a lot, it hasn't changed much. I actually just went out and found the recruiter and talked to him because my brother was in the Guard at the time. So I went in there and they're like, what job do you want to do? And had my ASVAB scores and we went over everything. And I didn't choose weather first, unfortunately. But I did my prior career field. We gave it to me and then I cross-trained into weather.
Very nice. Did you cross-train into weather with the Florida Guard? Or was it when you came to Massachusetts that you cross-trained?
When I was with the Florida Guard.
Very nice. Okay. And I guess what kind of led you in the direction of coming up to Massachusetts?
AGR job.
There you go. That'll do it. Yeah. And just for those who don't know, when you come in the Guard, traditionally, it's the 1 weekend a month. That's essentially what we're selling. And then AGR is?
Active Guards are full-time status. I was traditional all the way up until I got the AGR, Active Guard Reserve job up here.
All right. Put you on the spot. Florida Guard, Mass Guard. Where we like it more?
Both states claim nations first. So I don't know.
Fair enough. All right. We gave you the AGR job. It's all right, you know. So. But if you could give a piece of advice to someone, you know, kind of coming in fresh, you know, civilian to potentially a career in the Mass Air Guard, like what's that kind of golden standard of advice that you think you could give them?
Come in open-minded. Don't have your, you have what you want to do, but don't have stuck to it so much, 100%. Be open to other positions that are there. You never know what you might like or what comes open. It's, you might like this, but you're a better fit with this position or this job over here. Just because you like it doesn't mean you're going to excel. So be that open-minded and say, hey, you might be able to excel more over in this position than in that one.
I couldn't agree more. And kind of I'm going right on pace with that. Can you give us a little bit of like an oversight of what you do within the weather career field? Like what specifically a day-to-day looks like, maybe some of the off-the-cuff stuff that you get trained on, just in a broad spectrum, what is weather?
Well, within the weather community overall in the Air Force, Guard, Reserve, too, we're mainly broken up into three, RPA support, Air Force weather support, your fighters or your heavies that they do, and then we have what we are here at the 202 is Army weather support. So we support the Army. Right now we have habitually align customers. For us, we support the 3rd of the 126th General Support Aviation Brigade out of Massachusetts, out of here. So their nickname is the BOSOX. So they fly right here on Camp Edwards. From there, and then we have the 42nd Infantry Division that we support out of New York, and along with the 42nd Expeditionary Combat Aviation Brigade out of New York. And then we have the 63rd Theater Aviation Brigade out of Kentucky. So we just, with us, what makes it special is our customers are not all in one state. So we have chances and opportunities to go out of state to support those customers.
That's awesome. And I guess when you're saying support, is it just a breakdown of weather patterns and what they can or can't fly in, or?
It depends what the support we're doing. We do planning support for like commanders, planners and everything. So if they're coming out with a mission, we work with what they call the S3 or the S2, which is intel or operations. And we work with them to plan out weather, future weather, what could happen or what we're going to see possible happen. And we do those and give that information so the commanders and planners can make their decisions. Or when we support the aviation brigade, we forecast for that. And we give forecasts to the pilots, give them the weather of where they're going, how long they're out, so that they're able to make a decision whether they're going to fly or not.
Awesome. Okay. And then I guess career specifics, when we talk about the different career fields, we're often talking about, does this career come with a secret clearance, a top secret clearance, top secret SEI? Where does the career field at Otis, I guess, specifically currently stand?
Right now, only our officers have a top secret are allowed. And it's, my understanding is driven by the Army because they go into the secret squirrel room with them all the time. But the enlisted, we're all at secret right now, but the career field is changing. We are supposed to get top secret, but if that comes down and when is still to be determined.
Understood. And then, for those who are coming into the weather career field, again, fresh off the street, obviously they're going to go to basic training, Lackland, Texas. I guess big scope, if they're entering the weather career field, Air Force-wide, what does training look like? And then if they're coming specifically to Otis, what does training look like?
For Air Force-wide, for the Guard, all Guardsmen, we're going to go, if you go through your basic, and then we go to Keesler, at Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi, and go through our initial skills course there. That's going to be about 7 months. It could go a little shorter, longer, depending on Exodus and everything of when you go. And then all Guardsmen go to Camp Blanding out in Florida for our Air National Guard weather application course. And that is 4 months. And that's just going to take whatever we learned at, or whatever they learned at Keesler, and apply it and do it. And they'll fine tune it and everything. After that, that's when it changes from what Air Support does and what Army Support does. Here at Otis, for our Army Support and our other Army sister units, there's only 20, there's 24 of us total for Army Weather Support units. We can have up to 4 months of what we call MESS, which is Mission Essential Skills Training, and that's going to be at an active duty base. One of the 18th Combat Weather Squadron, or their DETS, or at least for the East Coast. For the West Coast, it's usually, I believe it's the 3rd Combat Weather Squadron or one of their DETS out there. For here at Otis, we're either going to go to Fort Drum or we're going to go to Fort Bragg. Those are usually our two spots that we go for them to do it. And then after MEST, we go to our Army Weather Support course, which we call AWISC. And that's out in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And that's going to teach you, hey, working with the Army and everything they do, just get you immersed into it. And that's about a month. And after that, we go back to Lackland for ECAC, which is Invasion Conduct After Capture, for about a week. And that is our whole pipeline. So coming off the street and from here at Otis with the Army Weather Support, you're looking about almost 2 years, give or take, a little less. It all depends on if we get the MEST and when you go through the schools.
Yeah, obviously that's a lot of time. I will say, and I think having been in the career for as both of us, and just Air Guard as long as we have, Biloxi and Florida aren't bad places to be.
They're not, and that's what I try to stress, because I know a lot of recruits I've talked to, it was a law and tech school. But I'm like, hey, when's the chance you get to go to Mississippi? You're right there by New Orleans, and you're right there by the Panhandle, Pensacola, Fort Walton Beach. And you're getting paid to go to school, and you're right there at it. And then at Camp Blanding, it's like, as soon as you get there, you get treated more like an adult because you're out of the pipeline or the training phase of everything, where they treat you like you're brand new. And you're right there in Northeast Florida, so you got Savannah to your north, which is about 1.5 hours away, 2 hours, and then you got Disney and Orlando, like people like to go to, Tyndall, Key West. So it's like, hey, when's the opportunity where they're going to pay you to go there? And while you're there, you get to do all this stuff. And then Arizona, it's Arizona, but you got Tombstone. So if you haven't been to Tombstone, and then the Grand Canyon's not that far away, there's a lot of stuff you can see and do while you also learn to be an Army weather support forecaster.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, especially like I just paid out of pocket to go down to Biloxi in July. So like, you know, so I love it down there. I guess on that, you get the training, you come back to Otis. How much opportunity is there for full-time in the career field, specifically at Otis?
At Otis, there's only one full-time position. Currently, that's mine, what we do, the meteorological technician. And that's it's not strictly just Otis. It's all 24 combat weather flights are all the same. They only fund it for one full-time person. There's chances where we get opportunities to go TDY for long periods of time to hone our craft, basically. I've sent people to 23rd Special Operations Weather Squadron at Herbert Field for months on end to go down and work backfill and work with them. Deployments that come up. I sent someone to Kosovo just for a couple months, the backfill, to get that done. We also have our deployments to Kosovo, and Kuwait is mainly where we go for our deployments. But we have exercises, too, that come up where we're able to send people to.
Again, just staying on that theme, how often do deployments happen for you guys?
Right as of now, with the habitual alignment, it's when our customer goes.
Understand.
And it depends on who it is what how many people we send. Right now, I have 3 people gone deployed. The last time they deployed, all 3 of them, was back in 2020 when they volunteered to go. The 42nd Infantry Division's our customer support, so they were called up and we were tasked to support them. So it really, at that time, went on to the Army of what they go. And Army usually went every 4 to 5 years.
Okay.
But we are changing, just like the Air Force-wide, where we went to the AFRGEN cycle, or Air Force Generation, I think it is. We're going to the same thing. Ours is just the weather, combat weather flights are just taking a little bit longer because of our support with the Army. But we are going to go into those same types of buckets where it's every 4 years.
Okay, awesome. And then you come back, you have the training, you've been with us for a number of years on the job, upgrade training, all things like that. What kind of civilian careers does this type of career field like transfer into?
And that is one of the downfalls I know with if you're trying to come in, and unless you go get a meteorology degree, and go work for, there's just not much out there for weather. It's possible. I do have people that are, one of my former commanders back in Florida, he works for Delta, forecasting for them. I have my current commander who works down at Aberdeen Proving Ground doing weather for them. I have one of my lieutenants that's deployed now. He works for IBM forecasting for them. It's possible they have them. It's just unless you get a degree, because the National Weather Service and all them want bachelors and doctorates to be with them. It's slim pickings, basically, for that.
I know this is a very narrow question, but do you happen to know how much of the training transfers CCAF, you know, college credits towards that bachelor's?
For a meteorology degree?
Yes.
I think it was, I would have to ask my captain, my lieutenant, because they did it. But it was quite a lot that went through where they didn't have to take all these other classes.
Of course.
And get done. I think 26 credits. I'm not too sure on that.
Okay, still. And then I guess, you know, I think that when people, at least the recruits that I bring in, they hear weather, I think their brain immediately goes to green screen, guy on, you know, Boston 25, telling you when the snowstorm is going to hit. Do you ever have moments when you're watching a traditional meteorologist and is it like, oh, I see what they're seeing, or is it more like, nah, you got that wrong there, bud?
It's both. I could see it, and then I can tell them it's like, eh, it's like you're just reading the models. You're not really forecasting, but yeah, it's a lot of times like, okay, I understand what's going on, and like if my kids or wife ask me, it's easier to explain of, okay, this is what's going on, this is what should happen, or this is why he's saying this.
That's fair. Your favorite type of weather?
Good weather? Yeah. No, I don't know. I do like to follow that cool weather much. I do storms. You got some good storms coming up. Thunderstorms.
I'm right there with you.
So especially you've been to Biloxi, so when you got a nice thunderstorm down there,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, it makes it easier to sleep.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. We had one down in the East Bay last night, and I pull up right to my slider door with a chair, and I look like a crazy person, but I'm just sitting there watching some weather. Yeah. So, let's see. As far as just the overall experience in the job, is there a moment that you have that's like your golden goose moment, you know, something that you can call back to where you really feel like you contributed to a very specific moment or something along those lines?
It wouldn't be one specific moment. It's deployments. I know it's really good. Like I tell people when you have your Army support weather and you have your Air support weather. Yeah, we have to provide weather to the heavies and the fighter pilots, but they don't care much about it. And they're like, okay, cool, weather, because I've deployed in with F-15s and supported them. And you know, sometimes you walk out and you're like, hey, weather's good. And it doesn't bother unless it's thunderstorms or something their plane's not rated for. But Army support is where it's at, because the rotary wing, the helicopter pilots really care, because it affects them, because a lot of our weather happens like 10,000 feet and below, and they're the ones flying there. So the smallest things, and they feel it. So you have turbulence there, you have thunderstorms, the fog is there, you have low clouds where they have to fly through. So it affects them more. So when we're doing that and we call those and we're like, yeah, you're going to have it from this time to this time, or it's going to clear up from this time so they can take off or do whatever they need to do, that's the good feeling. You get that gratification because you know what you did. It was good.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Is there anything in the job that you can point to that you feel is specifically more challenging?
Oh, whew. Forecasting in itself is challenging. Okay. It's again, I came from a career field that was black and white. This is what you do. This is how you do it. And then coming into weather, it was you have to be able to think. It's like, hey, this is what it's supposed to happen, but it's not going to happen. Or not, it's not going to happen, but it could not happen. Because you got your weather. It's not an exact science. It's a science, but not an exact science, because we are only seeing small portions of the area, and we don't have data for the whole area of itself. So, like when we're forecasting for an area, for an airfield, it's five mile radius. So we're anything we forecast is we're saying, hey, it's supposed to happen within this 5 mile radius. So having to forecast for larger areas like a range or something they're working on, and if we don't have sensors or anything out to help us verify, hey, okay, yeah, it's humidity is there, the temperature is this, or the winds are that out there, it's that can be challenging forecasting for that area, and especially in the Middle East where we don't have as much data places, and having to forecast on limited data, that does make it harder. But with time and doing it more, it makes it easier.
That's fair. And then I guess just to kind of put a close on it, is there, you know, an overall benefit of the Air National Guard that you can point to that's, you know, really benefited you specifically, or just something that you think that if you were, you know, training your troops, kind of pointing them in the direction of, hey, like, you know, this is going to help you, or?
It's you get to have a life not with just military. So you get to have your civilian life too, and you have a little bit more control. You want to serve, you want to wear the uniform, but you don't want the military control in your life. Let's say what I have to do, because I've seen it, been around a long time, so I've worked with a lot of them, and I feel that they don't have as much control as you do in the Guard, where you're not gone all the time. You can go and move and still be in, and you can move to places you want because each state has their own guard. So you might not have the same job, but they have their own guard. And it teaches you a skill. You get a skill to learn that you can go out and have a different job on the civilian side and do something totally different in the Guard. And that's even in weather, we have that. I've had officers that didn't even have a weather degree before that came in and did weather. I got my enlisted personnel that don't have weather degrees, and they do something different on the outside, but come in and still be able to do it. And it gives you a little bit of structure and purpose to do it.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think that just as you said at the very beginning, as far as that diversity and keeping an open mind, just kind of leads to this force being what it is and being as great as it is. Master Sergeant Mystician, I really appreciate you coming in, sharing your career field with us. Everything was great. Couldn't thank you anymore for taking the time to come out.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for watching. And I'd like to thank our guests and our fantastic public affairs team at the 102nd for helping produce this content. This is as new of a series as can be. Therefore, if there is something you would like to see in a future episode, or you have a question regarding the information in this episode, please do not hesitate to ask a question or leave us some feedback in the comments. If you have questions regarding your own future in the Mass Air Guard, please feel free to scan this QR code to fill out a contact card for one of our fantastic recruiters to be in touch with you. Finding out whether or not you can serve requires zero commitment. So if you have ever had even the most mild interest, find out if you have the authority to join. Contact your local recruiter and see how the Mass Air Guard can assist you in achieving your goals. Thank you for watching, and we hope this helps in giving you an edge in planning your future.